Good afternoon. All right, cool. Microphone works. All right. So we have our Finance and Citywide Projects Committee meeting. The mayor is going to join us shortly. So let's get going. We'll just start top of the list. Item number one, discussion regarding proposed revision general fund reserve policy.
Okay, great. So this is the third of three budget meetings that we're having for this cycle. After this, we'll have the two hearings in September. So we're trying to finalize everything at this point for inclusion in the proposed budget. So the first item here has to do with the general fund reserve policy. We talked a bit about this at the budget retreat in May. And as a result of getting our recent bond rating, one of the things that that stood out to us is that our current general fund reserve policy is best practice, but it's kind of minimum best practice where we have 2 months of operating reserves. And so we'd like to move that to 3 months of operating reserves. And, you know, in combination, the target is we would move it from 17% to 25%. We're currently around 20 right now. So we feel comfortable kind of sliding this up and having that goal to get to 25%. And so at this point, we've discussed this at length with the Budget Advisory Committee. So I'd like to ask Ron Startman real quick to just share a few thoughts from the committee on this policy.
Yeah, thank you, John. Reserve policy has been one of the most important issues that we've looked at in the committee over the past few years. And, you know, we've certainly been pleased to see that we're making steady progress in terms of improving it. The main message here is that Miami Beach is subject to much more event-type risks than many other cities. And, you know, in order to be able to absorb, we basically self-insure ourselves. We don't have insurance like business interruption insurance or something that would help pay the cost if we were to have a major event, so that it's really critical that we do have an adequate level of reserves, and it's also going to be money that's going to save us money over the long run in terms of maintaining our bond ratings or at least minimizing the effect of any downgrades, because this is one of the key factors that the rating agencies look at when you have a city with our characteristics. So unless there's any questions, I'll turn it back to John.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a good idea. We should do it. I'll move it.
How do you folks feel?
Seconded. I'm not on the committee, but
okay.
Okay, yeah.
But I support it.
Obviously, we all want to do this, and this is good planning. But will this impact other financial decisions as we move forward? Will we be able to do this much? Is this a goal? Is this a range?
So the goal is 25%. We're at 20, and our old goal was 17. So over time, we try to meet and or exceed that goal. So just having the formal policy that shows that commitment to try to get to that goal is valuable to the rating agencies, and we will, over time, usually at the end of the year, when we hopefully have a little bit of savings from the prior year, we try to allocate some funds to that reserve to try to keep up and build it up over time. Because as the budget grows by percentage, if you don't add to it, it starts to diminish.
Mm-hmm. It's very important to build up the reserves. I mean, even 3 months
sure.
isn't a long time if there's an emergency.
I for sure want to do this. So,
yeah,
yes,
it's
second.
Important.
Yeah. It's a goal, Commissioner. It's a goal, but obviously, year by year, depending on priorities or needs or issues, you have the commission always has the full discretion and authorization to budget in whatever capacity for projects. So you're not bound to it, but we did think that since we're already in excess of our current goal, it would be a good aspiration to set, and particularly when you get into some of the hopefully as soon as possible, but some good years. Moving up to that and making it a top priority is very good.
I love it, and I agree. What I just don't want to do is vote for this and then all of a sudden be told on other items, if I'm not in favor, well, you're bound because you voted on this for reserves.
Helps in our bond ratings, too. Okay.
So it was moved and seconded? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. So at this point, we'll move on to the second item. I'd like to cue up the presentation. So the first meeting, we focused a lot on the capital funds of the city. The second meeting, we talked a lot about the general fund and resort taxes funds. And so at this point, I'd like to spend a little time at this meeting to talk about the enterprise funds here in the city. So we have five of them. So we're going to walk through each one of them, starting with stormwater. So in stormwater, one of the things to keep in mind is as we're transitioning from a gravity-based system to a pump-based system, we're going to constantly have pressure on the operating budget as we bring those online to maintain them. And in this area, I think you would agree that it's really, really important that we have strong maintenance. We wouldn't want pumps or generators to fail during a storm event. So you'll see that we've recently added 10 pump stations and two more are anticipated this fall. And so as a result, you'll see in a couple of slides that we're recommending adding three positions to keep up with that maintenance. So we just wanted to make that very clear. And you can see here on this renewal and replacement slide that the consultants calculated that we should be investing about $3.1 million a year in our R&R. Right now, we have about $2.4 million that we can afford to do. So that gap isn't large. It's not really problematic yet. But this is the kind of thing that if we don't keep up with the rate increases in this fund, it could in the long term. So in this budget cycle, we've worked with Public Works to try to find some streamlining, some efficiencies. So you can see that we were able to trim $318,000 out of the operating budget. As far as enhancements goes, you'll see on the bottom there the three positions we were referring to try to keep up with maintenance needs. And then at the top, you'll see a one-time enhancement. The Neighborhood Improvement Design Criteria Package, that's $3 million. It's getting split evenly between stormwater and water and sewer. This will help establish the guidelines for our comprehensive design approach for the upcoming neighborhood improvement projects post-Jacobs Engineering Study. And so I just wanted to highlight that as a one-time enhancement. And as we move forward in time here and we start talking about potential need for a future rate increase, I want to try and clarify kind of what's happened to date. So, the total program, the most recent estimate is $658 million. When we get the results of the Jacobs Engineering Study, that number could change. But as of right now, that's kind of our planning number, if you will. So what we're anticipating is that every few years that we're trying to allocate about $100 million in bonds or different types of funds to try to chip away at that $658 million. And so to date, we had the first $100 million that was funded in 2015 for a $100 million bond issue. Then we did that again in 2017. And then the third $100 million is going to be cash funded from the Miami-Dade County Interlocal Agreement, which is really the old South Point RDA funds. And so that was great because instead of having to raise rates, we're able to use that money. The only caveat there is that we're still waiting to get $46 million. We will get it over the next 3 years, but we don't technically have it in hand. So that kind of leads us up to kind of where we are in time now. We're waiting on the Jacobs Engineering Study to be done this fall. And we're anticipating that we're going to need a fourth $100 million increment here in approximately 2021, 2022. And so unlike the GEO bond where we had a lot of flexibility because those are backed by the full faith and credit of the city, in this case, these bonds are backed by the stormwater system. And so the rating agencies like to see the rate that's going to support the debt service on those bonds put in place about a year in advance. And so the takeaway there is that if we don't put something in place and now we want to move forward post Jacobs Engineering Study, we might be limited depending on which neighborhoods go first and how much they cost. And we potentially, could put projects, some of them could be delayed. So I'm going to try and use this chart to help sort of bring this picture alive here. So this shows the planned $600 million increments, if you will. And the first three are ones that we're already done in some shape or form. So the 2015 bonds, you can see the dark blue is what's been spent, the light blue is what's committed. So it's 100% spent or committed. So then on the second $100 million increment, the 2017 bonds, you can see that three-fourths of that are spent or committed. And there is some in green that is available for upcoming projects. Then you look at the Miami-Dade County interlocal agreement funding, and you can see that about 13% of that is committed, and there is some capacity there. But the light green on top, is that 46%, we haven't gotten it yet, right? So if we get to post-Jacobs engineering study and we are ready to move forward, we could use up the what's available in green, I think, fairly quickly, and then be in a position where we need to start using some of that next $100 million, if you will. And at this point, I'd kind of like to ask Eric to come up and just comment real quick on what does that look like? It's post-Jacobs study, and we're ready to move forward, you know, and you see what's available here. How quickly could we use something like that up? Or if you could color that, it'd be great.
Good afternoon, Honorable Commissioners. Eric Carpenter, Assistant City Manager. Just want to make sure that everybody understands the magnitude of some of the projects that we could potentially be looking to move forward with. The South Point First Street project is approximately a $25 million stormwater piece. The pricing that we got on Upper North Bay Road and Lakeview was approximately $40 million. So between those two projects, if they were to happen to be, I mean, the First Street project is already moving forward. If Jacobs decides that the Upper North Bay Road Lakeview project is the first one that would move forward, we would basically be looking at all of the dark green in this bar chart would have been consumed in stormwater encumbrances for construction contracts. If we wanted to move forward with the North Shore neighborhood, that is currently estimated at approximately $40 million with an additional $20 million for Town Center. So you're talking about if we were to do North Shore and Town Center as the first project out of the Jacobs study, we would already, having done First Street, we would already be looking for additional capital dollars and not have them available. So the reason I bring this to your attention is it looks like a lot of money when you say that you've got $27 million unencumbered in the second tranche of bonds and $41 million unencumbered from the ILA. But in reality, that money could get encumbered very quickly in just a few contracts.
Yeah, Ron Starkman, Budget Advisory Committee. Just kind of building on what Eric said. When we first embarked on this stormwater program, the issue was really trying to overcome the inertia that was in place to get anything done. And the mindset was more, let's ignore the problem or push it down the road than let's take it on. So there was a real big push, and I think we did some major projects to get that off the ground. But now, the sense is that's no longer an issue. I think down the road, commissioners are not going to be looking to ignore this problem. And we have to be careful of the other side, which is to go too fast, too far, too fast, because we really are very limited in funds. And I think it's important that we look at, what is being effective. And also that, as time passes, we will have more information on how fast sea level rise is occurring and what parts of our city are affected. And if we don't want to see us spend all our money at once, and then as we learn more to find that we don't have the money we need. So just, I know hopefully the Jacobs engineering study will take that into account. But I guess I'm just suggesting that we, approach the spending here very carefully and make sure that we're getting the most bang for the buck as we spend these precious dollars that we have. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have any comments? Matisse, did you want to say something? Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, Ron, thank you for your comments. I'm not sure that what you said is factually accurate in terms of where this commission is in terms of moving forward. I mean, make no mistake about it, we are, in effect, in a pause, right? And until I see otherwise, I'm operating under the auspices of this commission is in a pause. I mean, Lakeview and Upper North Bay Road, we are not on schedule to do anything there yet. So until we have contracts and shovels in the ground, we're in a pause. So I don't know. I mean, I agree with your statement. That's where I hope we are. I don't think this commission is there yet.
I concur. I mean, I hope that what you said is true, that that current and future commissioners will remain as committed to our resilient infrastructure as we had been previously. I hope that's a true statement that you made. I don't know that we have evidence of that, honestly, because of the pause button that's been pushed, because we have, you know, folks pointing to Biscayne Bay, and water quality is crucial for all of us. But we have folks for political purposes, you know, saying the entire pollution of Biscayne Bay is Miami Beach's, you know, fault, which is ludicrous, but can certainly be used by someone as an excuse to continue to pause. So I think that we still walk on dangerous ground as it relates to continued commitment to our resilient infrastructure. There was an article that went out today, how Moody's is recognizing, and I don't know if, Matisse, that's what you were going to point to, but is beginning to recognize. They just bought a new company out of California that can help them modify their criteria, their analytical criteria for climate change. And so we know from the bond markets, we know from the insurance markets, we watch NFIP like a hawk, that it's very important for the future of Miami Beach that we stay committed to this program. And I agree with you that there was inertia, and this was before I was elected, but there was inertia, and then there was a major, major push, and it was even done under sort of emergency conditions, emergency procurement and other things, so that it could get going. I agree with the studies that Jacobs is doing. I think it's always good to take a look at our assumptions, our design criteria, our targets and goals, and tweak and tune. But like Commissioner Arriola, until I see us actually issue a bid on something, we're in a pause. We canceled bids. We haven't bid anything out. That's a pause.
I'm in agreement, Mr. Chair. I think that the pause is hurtful. I think that we really need, and I hope Jacobs comes through soon. When we changed from AECOM to Jacobs, that's when the pause took place. And I think it was important to hear from the ULI. I think it was important to hear from Harvard. However, I feel that it's detrimental now to the city to have this pause, because waters are still rising. Streets are still flooding. And we need to make Miami Beach resilient for the future. We have to look out 10 years, 20 years, and to stop and stop what we've been doing is just a big mistake. Yes, it's important that the water that goes into the bay is clean, but it's the same storm water that was going into the bay before we ever had pumps. It's not like we're adding gasoline or anything else. It's what's on the street. And I think we just need to move forward just as quickly as we can. And it shouldn't be a popularity contest that one street or one area. Is there a rooster in here?
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah.
Seems to be.
Jimmy.
That we need to do what's best for the entire city and not stop one neighborhood just because some people say, oh, we don't mind the flooding. It's really not flooding. It's just not accurate.
Let me ask a question to Eric or Jimmy or anyone who wants to answer it. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but let's say we were to decide, let's move forward on North Bay Road and Lakeview. What would that entail? What would be the lead time? Let's say today we all said, yes, let's go. How long before we could do something?
You're probably talking about 3 to 6 months to develop a design criteria package, and then probably 6 months to advertise and procure a contractor, and then you're probably talking about another 6 months of design time before a shovel goes in the ground.
That's 18 months, if I did my math correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was January of 2018, we were ready to go, right?
Correct.
Right. So the pause has effectively killed that shovel-ready project January 2018. We're 18 months after that. So if we were to restart, we're talking about another 18 months, best case scenario. And we're not ready to vote today. So, you know, this is just imaginary. But let's say we voted today, still 18 months. So the pause has already had the effect of at least a three-year delay.
Yeah, that's right. So
would that be accurate, Jimmy?
That's accurate.
Yeah. So just folks right. in the audience and out there watching on TV, the pause, at minimum, has been a three-year delay.
Right. Pay attention.
That's if we voted today. We're not voting today. We're probably not going to vote while you're on the commission. So
no, we won't.
We're talking 4 or 5 years. That's what the pause has caused us.
The current Jacobs work orders finish at the end of 2019-ish, right? After that, we're going to have another work order for them, which is to revise the standard design criteria package, right? That's going to yes. be the template, the starting point for every neighborhood. And that's going to take how long?
Realistically, that's going to take probably 6 months.
So it's longer.
We could work concurrently on the first package and kind of use that first package to create the template.
And get some overlap. So maybe there's some ability to, instead of having a 6 months for a standard DCP and then 6 months for the first neighborhood, you know, maybe you could do those at the same time. That's good. Because you're right. So you're the current work orders end of 2019, which means DCP mid-2020, which means hopefully awarding bid end of 2020, which means end of design of the first project mid-2021.
Correct.
So that's 3.5 years.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My comments are, I think, in line with some of the things Mr. Starkman shared. We're obviously dealing with a very difficult problem. In fact, that's one of the reasons I ran for office, is to try and be helpful when I thought it was a critical issue. I'm certainly committed to our resilient infrastructure. We've done a lot of good, hard work. There's a lot of things going on right now. West Avenue Phase 2, Indian Creek. There's work still in Sunset Harbor. We're still in Palm Hibiscus. So there's a lot of activity. And I think I would commend the administration that we're making improvements. I think the Urban Land Institute was very helpful. In fact, we've taken that. Commissioner Aleman sponsored a bioswale pilot using some of the new learnings we had. The READY team, which is cross-department, is great. We're doing more in community outreach. Having gone through my briefing, though, I think the punchline of what we're going to hear is that we need to dramatically increase stormwater fees, 20%. And I want to be clear that while we've made improvement, my support for incremental fees will be based on us doing better than we've been doing. And I want to be specific. Better planning and design, better execution, and better financial management. So let me just touch on them. Better planning and design. I think we need to be more explicit about where the vulnerabilities really are. Where is the water today that we're dealing with? We need to be more robust in our measurement of what results and impact have we actually had. If we go into some of these neighborhoods, and actually on the dais, we have sometimes have debates whether we've made improvements or not. Having spent hundreds of millions of dollars, I think we need to do better than that. We need to make sure we're incorporating actual data into our projections. So Virginia Key, as well as Naples, which are the longest running data, sea level rise is a scientific fact, averaging about 1 to 2 inches a decade, which means over the life of a road, 20 years, you're talking about 3 inches. And I think we need to incorporate that thinking. Two other comments on planning and design. Water quality remains a critical concern. I agree with my colleague. We're not the only issue related to water quality. There's a whole bunch of things going with sewers and other areas that have nothing to do with Miami Beach. But we are a leader, and we want to continue to do well. And on road elevation, I'm so happy Jacobs is working on that. That has been a very critical issue, very challenging to our community. I think we need to make sure we get it right. In terms of execution, we need to get out of these projects faster. I think if you talk to the folks in Palm Hibiscus and others, they wish we could do the work in a more expeditious way. We need to continue to improve with the community and make sure we're executing with total quality. I won't go through all the litany of examples, but I think it's fair to say in our efforts to address in an urgent manner that we need to now look to raise the bar on quality. I'll close some comments on the financial side. This body, I know I haven't, maybe others have, has never voted for a $650 million program, and it can't be an open checkbook. So what I think we need to do is make sure that we have scenarios where we're addressing the most critical needs. And in my mind, that's where the flooding is happening today. And we better make sure if we're going to allocate more money that we have that in place. I also think we need to value engineer our program. Road raising itself is probably $70 to $100 million. We can't afford to raise every single road at this level, and I'm not sure we're going to have the funds that we need. I think we need better financial controls, and we've got to realize that we're heading towards $6 to $7 million of annual operating expenses. My final thought would be our rates today are much higher than other cities. We have, in some sense, the gold standard of rates, which we're about to look to increase, and now we need the gold standard of performance. So my support of future increases will be based on us hitting those thresholds, and I look forward to working with the administration to do so.
A couple of points that I wanted to make, because I always try to think about the total wallet. While we do have probably some of the higher stormwater rates in the county, I would think, we also have the lowest property tax rates probably in the county and certainly in the history of the city. There's also good news for homeowners that are paying insurance. Malakoff, do you mind me outing you on your flood insurance renewal? When you go renew your flood insurance next time, Miami Beach homeowners, look in the details, and you will see a community rating discount. For Commissioner Malakoff, she was happily...
It was over $1,000 discount on my flood insurance for this year because our community rating went much higher due to all the work that had been done from 2015 to 2017, 18.
Right. So on the one hand, your stormwater fees went up. On the other hand, your flood insurance is going down. And that is because of the infrastructure that the City of Miami Beach put in and the credibility behind the program when the City of Miami Beach went and explained our program to the rating agencies. So we went from a CRA of 7 to 6 and then down to 5. And that's real savings for us. I'm excited. I got all geeked out, excited to renew my flood insurance and find out, you know, what my savings were. So on the one hand, you know, we do have to raise stormwater fees to pay for it. On the other hand, we see this real savings right in our pocketbooks. And it's going to be very, very important for financing and insurance of our properties that the community has a robust, resilient infrastructure in the face of climate change. And while Commissioner Samuel and you point to 2 inches per decade, and I don't think this is what we want to spend our whole finance meeting on, we know that we have seen more frequent severe storms in Miami Beach that caused us actually to change our criteria in terms of carrying capacity from our 5-year storm target to our 10-year. And that wasn't something we did just on a policy basis. That was because of the real data behind the frequency and severity of the storms and the flooding that we're experiencing here in Miami Beach. So I know this is something that I will be watching even while I'm not in office. It is something that every single resident in Miami Beach should be watching and demanding that our leaders stay committed to this program because our future depends on it.
Mr. Cohen.
And as far as road raising goes, I certainly hope that the road gets raised in front of my home because I want to be able to evacuate if I need to. I want to be able to get to the hospital if I need to. I want the fire truck to be able to get to me if he needs to. And I don't know that any of my neighbors feel differently about that.
Good afternoon. This is not our first meeting on this issue. And I've elaborated on the concern that I have every time I come to one of these meetings, sitting and watching and listening. And knowing a great many of our great staff standing behind me that has done tremendous work and probably the most experience in the country regarding the solutions that we need and how to implement them. With mistakes, you learn. And this is new territory. And there is no end to the amount of consultants that we can hire. There is no end to the amount of new ideas that will sit in front of us. But we do know that where the pumps and the road raisings have been implemented, it's dry. And it works. And this is called the mitigation plan. It's not a save us from sea level rise plan. And when it comes to planning, you guys know what kind of a lead time it takes. Now, I heard this discussion about 3 years. Well, I know that we've been pushing to get Town Center accelerated. But how can I plan? If the city is only in November going to decide what is the NAVD, which could change, which can therefore change our entire plans, and only at that time could take them six months minimum to 18 months to put out a design build, but yet you are requiring me to finish building within 36 months. So we have to plan harmoniously how the city's commitment and investment is going to go along with the private community. So think about this. Do you really want another situation where we're going to do an Indian Creek and close down all of the businesses after they've already been built? We have to take these things into consideration now. Now, when you look at the total amount of $650 million, well, you know what? That's a big nut. But we have a lot to protect in this city. We have a lot to protect, and you don't go all projects at the same time. The Lakeview stalled our whole program, let's be honest. It stalled our whole program because a few residents made very, very emotional pleas to stop raising their roads. And what happened was it stopped our whole program because who was next in line? It was supposed to be North Beach. But what happened? Nothing happened. So since then, for 9 months, actually 15 months, we've been still waiting for a design of a plan. Now, Public Works can't put together a plan. They can't do a review because we're waiting for Jacobs. So they're sitting, well, we're waiting for a policy change. We're waiting for Jacobs. So we're sitting there waiting, but the clock is ticking, and we don't know what to do. So how does the private business community look at this? This looks at these discussions as nuanced discussions of how to stall. Why how to stall? Because, yes, we have some programs in the pipeline that are working. And we have new things that we've learned. But at the end of the day, there isn't a new program for the next parts of the beach. So North Beach, once again, is now going to be in this situation, once we do get the Jacobs plan, of the tyranny of the urgent. Once we decide what's going on, we're going to look at our assets. The greatest asset is going to be right here on 17th Street. And we're going to say, wait, we got to put our protect the city's assets first. And then North Beach is going to go last again. And the developers are going to have to put in hundreds of millions of dollars now into their properties and wait and hope for when they're going to be next in line. Because they weren't online on the first funding, on the first projects. We got some pumps, and they do work. They are working. But we need our roads raised. And if you guys don't make the decision to give staff the ability to move forward, you're holding them back. Let them go. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could just, I'm sorry, go ahead. Just two comments I want to make. One is, on a positive note, by December of this year, we'll be breaking ground on West Avenue Phase 2, so that's moving forward. And we are looking to go out to bid this fall for the First Street project, which, as many of you may have seen yesterday, has significant flooding. The shallow injection wells didn't really make much of a difference there, so that's an important project. I do want to note, on the other hand, some of you may have seen in recent weeks an online article on 24/7 Wall Street said American cities that will soon be underwater, and the top 30 cities, and Miami Beach was number one on that list. And they indicated by 2060, $19.3 billion worth of property was at risk here. So there is, and when you run the numbers, $600 million is 3% to save a larger number. So, you got to also compare those issues. Is, we have a huge tax base on this island. It actually now is, I think, approaching $40 billion. What are you going to spend to save it? And those are just factors we need to consider. But we're doing what we can, and But the idea here is just to really give everyone a sense that while we're not going to be needing to do an increase this year, next year probably is a year we're going to have a very serious discussion about that if we, you know, as we move forward.
Okay. This is a great dialogue, and I love how we have it every 2 to 3 months. I want to kind of bring it back to the budgetary item at hand, because we're talking about the stormwater fees, and these have changed since I was here before. I know that we increased them, and by we I mean the body, the commission that was there at the time. We increased them to fund these very important projects that we need to get done. My bigger concern about this item is how we're billing it, because back in that time, there was a substantial increase, and the increase was flat, and the increase went across the board. And it's my understanding that it's a per-unit fixed fee. It's not tied to square footage. It's not tied to water consumption. And if we're looking at another 20% increase, I don't think it's fair that somebody that lives in a 400-square-foot studio would pay the same amount as somebody that lives in a 20,000-square-foot mansion. And I have a question about this, because most of our residents live these days in multi-unit dwelling buildings, condos, apartments, and we're making these units smaller and smaller and smaller to cram them into the buildings as fast as we can, so we're going to have more and more living in these units and less living in single-family homes. So, yes. So what I want to know, okay, let's take condo A. Let's assume we have modest condo A in North Beach, and it's 200 units. Do they pay 200 times the price that somebody in a single-family home does?
Yes.
Okay, that's not right. And I can't support this until we fix this, because what we're doing is we are paying for these very expensive projects on the backs of the lower and middle class. And that's not right. For me, it's not right that people that live in our humblest homes are paying the same price as people that live in our largest, richest homes with staff living in their guest houses, consuming 6, 8, and 10 times the water, and that they're getting a break on the backs of the poor seniors that are barely getting by in a studio apartment.
This is not water, though. This isn't water consumption. Well, this is stormwater.
Stormwater.
But yes, but people who live in a condominium and they leave their condominium to go out on their sidewalk and the sidewalk's underwater, the street's underwater, what does that do to their quality of life? This isn't about how much water each house uses. That's the water part of the bill. This is the stormwater that fixes the, hopefully, and soon, will fix the infrastructure around each condominium so that they will not be flooded, so their cars, if they have cars in a garage, that they won't be underwater. That's the problem the city has, and that's what needs to be fixed with stormwater fees. These are not the same as drinking water or water that's used to
right. I understand that point, but for me, this methodology of a flat rate is
flawed. It's not political. It's something that's urgent in order to pay for ongoing stormwater, which you just heard the city manager. This is a dire threat to the city. We need to do it, and we need to find a way to pay for it. And
I understand.
The way to do it fairly is stormwater fees. It's not unfair. Because everybody needs to be safe when they leave their multifamily.
Okay. I understand that we need to come up with a certain amount to move our stormwater program forward. There's some conflict on this body, whether we're going fast enough, aggressive enough, doing it enough, but we all want to do it, and we all want to fund it. So that's not the issue for me. The whole dialogue about if we're going quick enough, if we're going fast enough, if we're going right enough, I think we need to go quickly. I think we need to be aggressive. There's disagreement about whether we're as aggressive as we should be. I'm putting that aside for the time being. But for today, I'm here in a finance committee and budgetary capacity to determine how we're going to do that. And we're being told we don't have the money to do that. And we're being asked to vote to do a 20% flat increase. And the methodology, right?
Not this year.
Not this one? Okay, well, then I'm just getting it out there. I'm voting no on that one.
Eric, you had something to
say? I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that the methodology for creating a stormwater utility and actually implementing a stormwater utility is through the implementation of user fees. User fees are allocated based on who is deriving the benefit associated with those stormwater improvements. Since these are improvements within the public right-of-way and are improvements that are supposed to allow people to access each of their private properties, then each individual, in theory, is deriving the same benefit. That's what's been tried in court. That's what's been approved. Stormwater utility isn't necessarily the only way to fund stormwater improvements. We've shown that we've tried to come up with outside-the-box thinking. We're using revenue from our future convention center hotel. We're using revenue associated with the tax increment financing at south of 5th. I'm always open to new ways to try to, you know, chip away at this big number. But ultimately, what we need to do is stay within the confines of what is the intended purpose of a stormwater utility.
So what are we being asked to vote on today?
So this is really a big heads up that we're not voting on this today or really for this budget cycle, but we may have to do something more like mid-year, post-Jacobs, that we would probably come back with updated plans, the sequencing, how water and sewer fits in, the whole package. And if we can just sort of agree on at least the baseline and understand what's coming, then when we get there, hopefully it'll be a much more efficient conversation.
John, when you briefed me on this, I think you were anticipating beginning of 2020 we would have to move to raise these funds. Was that correct?
Right, and that timeline's based on hopefully the Jacobs engineering study being complete this fall at some point, digesting whatever, you know, that study has to offer, and then making a policy decision at some point, 2 or 3 months probably after that, regarding the rate that would support.
I'm worried about timing because we have an election coming up. We'll have a couple new commissioners, and then, you know, they may want to then be briefed. So my concern is that this decision may then, instead of being early 2020, may be pushed back several months into, like, summer of 2020, and I'm worried about timing for funding. And so if timing is a concern, then I would urge us to make a decision on this now in the fall.
One of the things that I asked for out of the Jacobs study was for Jacobs to look at the scope of the neighborhoods, because the boundaries of each neighborhood had been drawn very, very large, and within them had some areas with really more chronic flooding issues and other areas that were at higher elevation where the flooding issues weren't as severe. So this is setting aside, of course, the water and sewer system and their status in those neighborhoods, but just picking on the storm, for Jacobs to look at drawing those neighborhood boundaries smaller and more discreetly, and that would allow us to prioritize differently so that we could really prioritize smaller pockets of lower elevation around the city. And so I'm looking forward, as Jacob completes their work, to seeing how that turns out, because then, you know, while we look at this $27 million in the 2017 bonds and the $41 million from the ILA, and we're in our traditional thinking of the projects and how many projects we can fit into that size of pot. The way that we scoped the neighborhoods very large previously meant that we couldn't fit that many projects in there, and we wouldn't get to that many different parts of the city. But if Jacobs makes tighter, more discreet neighborhoods based heavily on elevation and chronic flooding problems, then maybe we can fit more of those smaller pockets into the money that we have. So I think that's going to be interesting to see, but you're right that come November, we're going to have new commissioners. This is the most important thing that we do in this city is worry about climate change and sea level rise and our path to the future. So they're, I'm sure, going to need time to be briefed, and I think that, you know, that needs to be a priority for the administration immediately after the election, is to get those folks up to speed, because there's always a wild amount of misinformation, intentional misinformation spread by people on this project and what we're doing and what the benefits and risks of it are. And so the newly elected commissioners are going to need to hear the real deal from you, Eric.
No action item. This is just a briefing. Okay. Right. We've been briefed.
Okay, great. That's a robust, good discussion. Okay. So let's
You want to go to item three?
No, we're not done yet with the enterprise funds. So let's go to water sewer. And so we have a slide here that just summarizes the operating budget. We were able to identify a few reductions there, and you see the one-time enhancement, the half of the DCP, $3 million as well. So in this fund, really, when we're looking at the capital projects, they're often contingent on the stormwater project program because we wouldn't want to tear up the streets twice if possible. And as we're waiting for the Jacobs Engineering study for stormwater, we're also waiting on the Hazen and Sawyer study for water and sewer. And that, I think we all can anticipate that there's going to be, you know, a lot of need coming from that study. And so the way it would probably work is that we would take them, you know, the critical needs from that study, overlay them with the updated stormwater program. Wherever those overlap, we would do both at the same time. Where they don't, we would have to, look at the criticality of the projects. And at that point, we would size a bond to sort of fit the projects that we are trying to address. And the rate increase would be basically tied to that. So right now, that's a little more to be determined. So, you know, on the stormwater side, we had a pretty good idea of what that rate increase looks like. So really the takeaway here is that in the shorter term, we're definitely going to need to address the stormwater rate, and probably 6 to 12 months after that, we'd have to address the water sewer rate to also have a bond, to support a bond for that. Okay, so why don't we just jump right into parking? So if there aren't any more questions on stormwater, water, sewer, we'd like to move forward. Okay, great. So most of this information you saw at the budget retreat. So as we've talked about, we took some steps last year, which is for us, it was a good success story. We were able to work with the commission to address the parking system. We'd had utilization that had been trending down for several years due to the impact of ride sharing. And I think at this point, if you look at the right column, we've reached a new normal, if you will. So I think we're in pretty good shape. We've also talked at the policy level of trying to reduce this transfer to the general fund to zero. So we're at 1.2. Ideally, we would have addressed that in this budget cycle because it's a pretty tight year. We're not able to do that this year, but something that we'll try to do in the future. Parking also transfers money to the transportation fund to help support the trolley program. And so we've taken that down over time. We might have to increase that next year when the intelligent transportation system comes online, and there'll be some operating and maintenance costs that go with that. But I think we've positioned this fund in pretty good shape. And parking's also took a hard look at their budget, and we're able to trim out $460,000 there. So really the only decision point for this budget cycle really is proposed revenue enhancements for a high impact period. So at this point, I'd like to ask Saul Francis, the parking director, to just come up and just give a quick overview on these.
Good afternoon. So the recommendation before you is it's another tool in the manager's toolbox during high impact events where in his emergency powers, he would be able to provide or establish a premium for parking rates in that area. So the analysis here is, or the recommendation here is, during spring break, we include a Memorial Day weekend, and then police, through their intel, they identify events that are coming to the city and having some high impact, and the manager would have the authority, the recommendation is the manager would have the authority to put those premium rates in during those periods. And essentially, there's options here, so it's kind of like DEFCON 5 or DEFCON 4. So it's 100% if it's a really high-impact event and we feel that there's going to be a substantial impact, then the rates would be doubled, essentially, for on-street and off-street. So the $4 rate would turn to 8, the $2 rate at lots would turn to 4, and then a flat rate of 30 at garages, which then also helps the police department because then we can enact some operational changes that will help traffic flowing in and out of the garages, as well as there should be a positive impact on traffic as well, as that higher rate will hopefully push those parkers into other areas if they're seeking for a lower rate. So it'll diffuse some of that parking demand or that traffic that's in that congested area.
Sounds like a great idea. Is the $30 sufficient?
I'm sorry?
Is $30 for the day, is that sufficient, or should that be raised as well?
It's sufficient as we proceed with that, crafting that into the ordinance for the ordinance change. We're probably going to recommend maybe for a six-hour period, because that's typically what the maximum would be for any type of usage in the entertainment district.
Yeah, and Mayor and Commissioners, we have not built this revenue into the budget because we don't know if we'll, this is a tool to use on these weekends to have better management of the garages. But right now, the parking codes that we have don't give us that ability.
Is this increase going to apply to residents as well as non-residents?
No. Residents will continue to enjoy their $1 an hour through Park Mobile and waiver of the Park Mobile convenience fee. So there will be no impact either at meters or in garages.
Okay, great. So let's move on to the Convention Center Fund. Normally during budget time, we don't talk a whole lot about the Convention Center Fund. I just thought we could spend a little bit of time on it this year just because we're really ramping up based on the event mix from more of a partial activation of the center to more of a full activation of the center. And when you're looking at this budget, we really have two of our main partners, Spectra and CenterPlate. Spectra manages the Convention Center itself, and CenterPlate handles the food and beverage service. So I'd like to ask Matt to maybe just talk a little bit about what we're expecting for the upcoming year and how we're budgeting for that.
Sure. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Matt Kenny, Director of Tourism and Culture. So we have a few enhancements we'd like to make, both from the Spectra and the CenterPlate points. They're all positions. As we continue to bring the building to the finish line, we have identified some positions that will need to be brought on board to really allow this building to thrive in its full capacity. I will say that to date, both Spectra and CenterPlate have been great in mitigating costs, mitigating positions. CenterPlate especially has been sending some of their staff to other cities to work, so we don't absorb those costs. Trying to cut as many costs as we can while still operating the building.
And Matt, just to interrupt you, the positions are positions by Spectra and CenterPlate. They're not City of Miami Beach employees. They're not headcount for us from a benefit or pension, but they're positions under their contracts that they want to add to provide the quality of service to match now, the quality of the building.
Absolutely correct. You can see the list here. I won't go through each one of them unless necessary. We have representatives from both entities here. If anyone has any questions regarding these, we're expecting. We have approximately about 34 events that have taken place this year. Without the building being fully open, so we're really anticipating next year. 2020 is looking very full for the Convention Center, which is great, both on a P1, P2, social catering, and P3 side, so we're really excited. A lot of these roles are coming from events like when we've had SuperCon, which about 35,000 people in the building, really seeing, you can see the traffic manager, curbside manager, to really ensure that we're offering the best customer service and, the lowest impact to our residents possible. If you would like to hear from either CenterPlate or Spectra, they're both here as well. Good job, guys.
Yeah. Okay, super.
By the way, just Commissioners, just two things quickly to show the impact. We talked about the parking fund before. Just year to date compared to last year, the fact that this building officially opened really last September again, full shows. So in this fiscal year, the two garages that are serving the building, 17th Street and Penn, are $1 million up over the last year because of the traffic. The other thing is when we had $1 million roundtable here, which was the first event to use every square inch of the building. The Apple store?
No, it was the Nike store.
Nike store called a week or two later saying they ran out of merchandise. So please call us in advance and let us know what's coming. Yeah. So
we had restaurants as well. We're saying, can you just let us know? Because we were lined up down the road on Lincoln Road, and they need to order more food.
And the people that attended raved about it. I met a couple of the women at a lunch, and they were selected. it was very competitive to be invited to this million-dollar roundtable.
Yeah.
And they were so impressed with the convention center.
Thank you, yeah. It was 65 countries represented, and of those 65 countries, I think it was, I might be lying, about 65% of those people were here for the first time. So it's exactly what we want. Good. Thank you.
How many people do you think came to that? I mean, what was the capacity?
Million-dollar roundtable was about 12,000 people. We've had 165,000 people go through the doors of the convention center this year.
That was 12,000 people for the million. So yeah. Yeah. Imagine what a good concert can do. Right?
Yeah. No fight for me.
Okay, great. Well, that wraps up the enterprise portion of the presentation, because sanitation fund will be covered in the zero-based budget presentation. So before we get to that presentation, I just want to double check. Are there any other potential changes to the operating budget that we're aware of? Because following this meeting, we're going to come back to you at the first public hearing on September 11th with the proposed budget document. At that point, there will still be an opportunity to make tweaks as well at that point. But just, you know, just in case there is anything pending, just want to make sure there's an opportunity to. Yes, sir.
If I may, we talked about some additional treatment beds for the Marchment program and maybe
correct.
Domestic bonds. I just want to confirm in the next iteration, those will be included?
Yeah, we don't have the numbers associated with it right now, but from what we've heard preliminarily, we could probably accommodate what the recommendation would be within that $213,000 that we had kind of left over after everything was said and done.
And I guess I want to ask about the IPREP HIV program from University of Miami Health.
Yes, the PrEP program, remember that was a one-time enhancement of $250,000. That one is queued up for next Wednesday, July 31st, Finance Committee meeting. And so depending on the outcome of that, we may or may not include it into the proposed budget.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, so uh-huh. Yeah, we're just talking about enterprise budgets today. Right?
I was actually at that point pausing to say if there's any other budget requests from any source at this point, it's good for us to hear them so then that way we can try and make that proposed budget document as accurate as possible going forward. There's still an opportunity to tweak it all the way till it's the final adoption of it, but at this point we, you know, just one last call here at least for until September 11th.
All right, folks, budget requests?
No, I don't have any additional requests, but I did think it was worthwhile explaining. Jimmy, remember that there had been the discussion about, I had heard a rumor that the park rangers and the road rangers were getting cut, and then I did some rumor control checking with the city manager, and so my understanding is the park rangers are not being touched.
No.
But the road rangers are, and it was a prioritization discussion. I just think it's worthy of sharing with the public sort of the thinking and the reasoning there.
Sure.
In terms of priorities,
The park rangers know they, you know, they, as you know, they have served a tremendous function both from a public safety perspective, hospitality, code enforcement, and in fact, if anything, we have growing demand for them. The road rangers, you know, came in at a time a few years back where there was a real focus on trying to keep throwing a lot of resources into trying to keep our roads as open and moving as possible. As we looked at sort of our core functions and as we're, you know, in coming years, some of the functions they play, which are nice, you know, somebody gets a flat tire, but, you know, there's AAA and there's other services like that. We have increased the number of police reserve now under our CBA, so we're going to have more reserve officers that can help with traffic and other issues. And even with our tows, you know, we have contracts with our vendors for police tows. So it struck me that was an area where we had a headcount of four with benefits and pension and where we were providing maybe a nice but not a need in a way. And I think those are the kind of decisions we're going to be looking at going forward is, you know, things that might be nice to continue, but as we, you know, in times where we're looking to tighten, there are alternatives to that service that are provided. And really, I think we were unique probably among cities. We know the Expressway Authority has and stuff, but in offering that service, and I think there are alternatives to that. So that was our proposal.
And also part of the thinking is that the transportation fund we're anticipating next year with that intelligent transportation system coming online, that we are going to have a large O&M expense that goes with that. And so we were going to have to make some hard decisions sooner or later, and that was part of that equation as well.
Cool. And then I have a request too, John. And I think maybe we can run this out of our Parks and Recs department, but just some programming we did this past year that was very successful. The Vegan Fest was like $17,000. There was a request to redo that. I know that was very successful. Want to do that again. And then I'd like to put some money into some programming for like Black History Month and just for our African-American tourists.
Commissioner, we did put in, or Vice Mayor, a $100,000 in the budget for cultural activities generally. And so we can certainly prioritize those within those.
Is that, but that's not Memorial Day weekend, that's separate?
No, that was separate. This was just a generic fund for the kind of things that come up during the course of the year that we know come up. It's not, at this point, it's not allocated to any particular thing.
Okay, yeah, I think there was some requests for like Black History Month, like in February. I just think it's important that we proactively do things for our African-American tourists, which is a very large tourist base for us, and I want to be proactive on that.
I believe the Memorial Day weekend money is separate line item. Yeah.
And then, and so the Vegan Fest, I know we did it this year, got good responses. It was in North Beach, which is an area we're trying to activate, so I want to make sure we have that. But that was like $17,000, so it wasn't a big number, but someone asked for that, so I want to make sure we have that.
Okay. Sounds good. Are we
anything else? I mean, any? I mean, we still have till next week to put things in the budget. But anything else?
Nothing else. Okay.
Got it. Okay. So at this point, let's transition to the zero-based budget sanitation presentation. This presentation will be a tag team, really, between myself and Public Works. And before we get started, I think this was an initiative by Commissioner Areola to start taking some hard looks at the budget and see, hey, you know, zero-based budgeting, maybe it's not a tool that we can apply to the entire budget because it does take a long time and it's a deep dive and so on. But on a limited basis, we can definitely take a proactive look at different areas of the organization and use it as a tool to, especially on the cost side of the equation, because oftentimes we're just talking about maybe adding additional revenue or increasing rates and that kind of thing. And so I think we found it to be a very valuable exercise, and we hope that you'll share that feeling when we get through with the presentation.
Let me pause you for a minute. Mm-hmm. Want to get Ron's thoughts. Did you like this?
Got excited. Okay. So first off, we thought that sanitation would be a really good candidate to use the zero-based budget tool, if you will, on, mainly because there is a revenue side and a cost side, and it is an area where we currently have a funding challenge. So we thought that as an enterprise fund, it's pretty large, $22 million. Sanitation is something that touches every single resident in the community. We thought this would be a good place to apply it. So let me talk a little bit about this chart and the challenge that we're trying to solve, if you will. If you look at the left part of this slide, and you'll see that in 2016, there was $3.6 million transferred in from the former South Point RDA that was paying for a significant chunk of sanitation's expenses. And in that year, from 16 to 17, we were sunsetting that RDA and transitioning to paying that $3.6 million from resort taxes. So we'd seen that coming, and we were planning for that. But unfortunately, what we ran into is the impacts of Zika, Hurricane Matthew, Hurricane Irma. So we've had some pretty slow growth during the last two or three years in resort tax. I think the commission's pretty familiar with that. And so what's happened is that the portion of the budget, the revenue that's supposed to come in from resort tax has been slow to come in. And so if you look at the green row, you'll see that there's two elements to the current shortfall in sanitation. One is the resort tax shortfall, and you can see that In 2018, it was $2.8 million, but we've been able to chip away at it about $1 million a year. And we're hopeful that by next year, we will kind of grow out of that issue. So that's not really the structural issue that I'm dialed in on. The one that we're worried more about is the one below it in bold. That's more the $855,000. So that's really where more of our current revenues don't really match our current expenditures, and that's the kind of thing that we sort of had that issue with parking last year, and we worked together with the commission to come up with some strategies to address that. And I think as part of this process, you'll see that we're trying to accomplish the same thing with sanitation for this year. And so one of the reasons why this is really important is because we used to have a healthy fund balance in this fund. But when we had Hurricane Irma, and that was largely a vegetative event, if you think about it, we had a lot of cost, $3.7 million that we incurred that used up fund balance in order to address that event. And although hopefully we will be getting that back over the next year or two, we're starting to draw down that fund balance. And even though if you see in the last column, it shows kind of zero, it's actually at that point we'd be hitting our two-month reserve. So it's not technically zero, but anything over and above our reserve. So what this really means is that we can't keep pushing this issue off. We don't have that luxury. And so we're hoping that as a result of this exercise, we can really take firm steps to try and address that. Okay, so I talked a little bit about what zero-based budgeting is, and one of the things that our team did is they worked to identify what are the core programs in sanitation and what are maybe the non-core ones. And when we say core, what does that mean? Well, what that means is if you're looking at any city in America at their sanitation function, what would that kind of look like? And then more of the non-core was more of the custom type programs and services that we're offering here in Miami Beach. And so I think you'll find that to be instructive, at least we did. So at this point, I'd like to ask our partners in Public Works to give a good portion of the presentation, and I will jump in as needed to help out. And then at the end, when we talk about budget strategies, I'll definitely try to give part of that presentation.
Good afternoon. I'm Darrell Caldwell, the sanitation director. So as we see here, we have the mission and the vision. There's been no change to that. And I wanted to bring to your attention the level of services that we provide. So here in the sanitation division, we provide services basically 365 days a year for the most part with the skeleton crew on Christmas. And we have our 7-day service and 5-day service, and you can see a few of the differences there. And I'll drill down into these are just a glossing of the areas that we actually cover. So this is what South Beach, Mid Beach, North Beach, and all encompassing of these areas are the different functions and facets that the sanitation division covers. And again, here's the 5-day map. Just a brief overview. So we, after doing this exercise here with zero-based budget, we've took a look at our core programs and our non-core programs, and our core programs there on the left, you notice, where litter control is primarily our number one core program that we have here in the city of Miami Beach when it comes to sanitation, and then also on our non-core side, we have things such as the doggy bag program. Pressure washing the sidewalks or things of that nature. And so here with this slide here, we wanted to pull out exactly the cost associated with each of these programs. If you look there on the left with the non-core side, with litter control and things of that nature, and you can see the difference there. I didn't know if you wanted to chime in there, Jay. But I know that this is a slide that we just wanted to illustrate, basically with one shot, what the difference is with our revenue and expenditure side.
One thing to highlight is if you look at the core program, every one of them has a clear revenue stream that supports it, if not fully, significantly. So does recycling, by the way. Recycling is a zero there. As you'll see later, there is a revenue stream. It's just that we've never chosen to pass that on to the customer. But on the other hand, the non-core programs, many of them don't have any revenue stream attached to them, and it was those NAS core programs that really sort of drive to some degree the operating deficit. So.
Essentially.
That's how you balance. We're not balanced yet. We'll get there. I'm afraid.
So here with this slide here, I wanted to drill down a bit in some of the different areas that the sanitation...
Pardon the interruption. Jimmy, let me ask you a question. Recycling, it's a zero now, but if we were to beef up our recycling program, could we get revenue from that? And the question
In my professional experience, I would say no, due to the markets that we currently have at this point. Currently, at our material recovery facilities, the markets are really low, particularly with plastics and paper. And right now, most of all the recycling markets right now are in a deficit at this point.
Yeah, so I knew that, right?
Okay.
So the question really comes, and this is going to come up before us at some point with the Coke contract, because they're espousing that their plastic bottles are so valuable, blah, blah, blah. If they had value, we could monetize it, right? So if there was a true recycling program in this country, which, by the way, there is not, these things would have value. The fact that we can't monetize our recycling goods means they have no value, right? So, like, if these things were really being put back into use, they'd have value, right?
Yeah, no.
I mean, that's like simple economics. The fact that these things have no value, we actually have to pay to get them taken away, mean they have no value, meaning it's cheaper for them to produce new plastic than to recycle old plastic.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of literature out there that, you have huge piles sitting in China of stuff that never
right.
is being recycled, and so the market, no one is paying anybody to
right.
take
so,
their stuff.
Yeah, so I've educated myself on this, and it's shocking, appalling, whatever word you want. There is no recycling program in this country, right? 9% is currently recycled, which is incredible, right? A recycling program literally is we put in recycling bins, it gets shipped to China or third world countries where it goes into landfills and or it gets burned, which is even worse for the environment. So, like, the recycling, we all feel good about throwing in these blue cans. That's just being shipped to Indonesia to pollute the waterways for, you know, children and indigent people. It's appalling, right? So
well, Commissioner, a lot of that
ourselves.
Material isn't actually even leaving the country.
Right. Some of it
isn't
even leaving the country. It's going right to landfill, right?
Right.
It just gets separated and shipped to a landfill. Like, so right. anyway, the question is, can we monetize a recycling program? The answer is no.
And if there were any monetizing, it would be done through our contract with the county, which we would see a reduction in that per unit cost.
Is paper recycled?
Yes. As far as is it actually being recycled,
is it being
more so
recycled?
than the other
than plastic?
But at least paper is biodegradable, right? So it's recycled, but it's also biodegradable. It's not terrible for the environment like plastic is or e-waste. Anyway, keep going, please. Thank you.
I was gonna. If you look at the next slide here, this is an overview of our litter control and debris removal teams. This is a slide that we created for, this is a large portion of our core programs, and so we're going to drill down into that. So we're looking here, it's a crew to 5 to 9 employees that work from 5 a.m. to around 10:30 p.m. every evening. And the highlight of this particular slide here is that our budget is for $90 million for 81.64 full-time employees. And if... another, our residential collection of solid waste, we have a contract for that for this to occur. So the FTE is zero there, and our budget now for that is $2.3 million. And code enforcement, also illegal dumping, we have currently 8 FTE assigned for that, and our budget for that is $890,000. And street sweeping. With 7.5 full-time employees with this particular core program, with a budget of $1,000 with over 150 miles annually. 100,000 miles annually. Recycling, as we were just indicating before, is there are no FTE associated with that, and 223,000 on average per year that we're
paying. That's just them. Paid to the county?
Yes, and for the contract. And commercial solid waste management, so the $111,000, we have one FTE associated with that. And we'll actually talk about this a little later, a little bit more in depth. And a roll-off containers for the contractors. It's $111,000 budgeted for that as well. And that's one of our core – this is our last core program for administration. It's just 6.5 FTE, which we are the ones that provide oversight for the other seven core programs that we just went over. The RDA, currently we're at 4.2. We have 38.55, as we indicated here, FTE that actually are in that particular area conducting litter control, street sweeping. I outlined the area there of the city where it's, you know, where that is located. I guess we need reminding. And so anything in that particular area, such as the doggy bag dispensers, the beach walk, all of that area there is $4.2 million.
Let me just sort of speed things up a little bit, because I think we all have been briefed on this. What action items do we need to take on this? And then also, separate from the sanitation discussion, I'd love to get Jimmy or Eric's or John's opinion on the exercise of zero-based budgeting and what we learned from it. So two separate questions. What did you think of the exercise, but what action items are you looking for from us?
John, why don't
you
jump
thank you for this briefing. It was excellent.
Why don't you jump to the budget strategies?
Skip the budget strategies. Yeah.
So let's go to slide 27. Where are we here?
Yeah.
Who's got the clicker?
Uh-huh. Budget
strategies. Okay, great. So I just want to walk through some of the short menu that we've come up with both on the expenditure side and the revenue side. And some of these we're also recommending. So let me walk through all of these, and then we can summarize them for you, and we can have a good discussion at that point. So one of the first things that Daryl, our new sanitation director, did is he came in and he immediately found some efficiencies there totaling $138,000. Secondly, the alternate side parking pilot, this has been recently implemented. When did we start, Jay?
The 8th of July.
Yeah. July 8th. So this is recent, and I think you've seen LTC on it. And this is the kind of program where, you know, we have currently today a whole bunch of folks with blowers that have to blow the leaves and debris from underneath vehicles and things like that to get it out to the middle of the street so that the machine can go through and clean. And so this program that we're trying to pilot is very similar to one in Manhattan, where folks would be asked not to park in certain areas on certain days. And then that way, we would need less blowers. It'd be less noisy for the residents. There'd be less dust.
It would also cleaner streets.
Right, and much cleaner streets. And more than likely, because it's more efficient, we might be able to clean more streets as well. And that also helps with water quality, because the stuff can get in the drains as well. So we're kind of excited about this one, because you see here, this slide is the pilot, and we also have one about trying to take this citywide as well.
You get better service at lower cost.
Right? Yeah.
Correct. And so, you know, there probably might be, you know, a little bit of disruption at the beginning as folks get used to it, but we have high hopes for the program. One thing, when I was giving this presentation, going through this briefing, I think, with Commissioner Samuel, and he reminded me that cleanliness of neighborhood streets was actually, you know, highly rated in the 2019 community survey here. And so you can see that it's actually the second most important service that was requested or ranked. And then in terms of the opportunities for improvements, it made the top five list. So, you know, I guess I needed that reminder, because I hadn't really thought about that, but that was great. So I went ahead and inserted those slides. And on the sanitation side, code side, we have four officers that are paid for by sanitation. I think one's been vacant for a while. So we kind of have a pretty good feeling that we think we could live with two here. So we'd like to try it out. And then, hey, you know, if that doesn't work, we could always reevaluate. But right now it feels like something we could handle.
There was a thought that these positions up years ago would pay for themselves, but they don't. And so.
Right. And the doggy bag crew, this was another efficiency that both Daryl and Jay were able to identify. So this is one that we're recommending as well. So we're still providing the service just more efficiently.
And, but this is an important one. You know, this is an example. We spend $333,000 a year for 95 doggy bag dispensers across the city with three full-time employees attached to it. So this is sort of what you could call not a core service, but, you know, to some important, but it's but we think we can do it with a crew of two, I guess.
Yeah, I was surprised by how much we spent on the bags, but we do want, you know, we do want them to be available for pickup because we know that there's a water quality impact, there's an aesthetic impact. My question for you was, do we need to relook at the dispensers we're using? If the dispensers had more capacity for refill bags, then you wouldn't need as much human labor to go buy them, you know, to visit them. Are we buying the right refill stations?
Yeah, well, I would say that's something maybe we could take a look at. But what I've actually seen with my own eyes are residents that are, like, taking reams and reams of bags at one time. Mm-hmm. So I think that is probably there's a way we can address that instead of having someone taking some home with them. That might help.
And the number that the 95 does not include those that are in the parks.
Oh, this that does not include the ones
does
in the
not
parks.
Include what's in the parks.
These are in neighborhoods.
And are there doggy bag dispensers that also have receptacles attached to them? Because sometimes they're just the bags, but not a place to place the waste.
The ones that are on the streets do not have the receptacles. They just have the bags because basically, there's cans almost on every corner. So in the parks, I think it's a little bit different. But the ones on the street do not have the receptacle.
Daryl, I want to say, first of all, you're already doing a stupendous job, and welcome aboard. So, and great presentation. I also noticed the Big Belly is costing us like $231,000 a year. That program was, those cans were supposed to pay for themselves through labor efficiencies associated with proactive notification of whether or not they were full or empty. So what's your observation, and what does that contract say? I know this says it expires February 2020, but if it's costing this much, maybe we should get out of it.
Well, the way the contract was written, and was almost negotiated on the dais, if you will, it was looked at as far as a five-year contract, a five-year payback, in order to keep the cost down and to keep it under $500,000 for 5 years, the first 3 years were almost a guarantee. So, and that's why that date is important, is because if we want to get out of it or terminate it, and there is a termination for convenience clause, but you're not really going to reduce that money because that monthly service charge through those first 3 years, it's already a done deal.
Okay.
In addition to that, there are some other expenses, taxes, supplies, damage, insurance, because it's a private entity product that's sitting on the right of way, we're absorbing those costs.
I see. Terminating prior to February 2020 is not our interests.
And
you're recommending at that point that we would.
You're right. There was a mistake on this. It was 2021.
We updated the slide, but in the book,
it's 2021.
It was actually. Yeah, it started in 2018, so it's 21.
Can I ask a question? Because it's a follow-up. You asked what I was about to ask. I'm completely in sync. I thought that the Big Belly program was either supposed to finance and pay for itself or make money if we wanted to consider an advertising component. And I'd like to get out of it now. And that number that's there is very interesting to me because it's costing us $231,000. And a few pages up, you're asking us to do something that we haven't done since 2008, which is do a recycling pass-through to our residents, coincidentally, in the amount of $231,000. So what I was going to follow up with, I'd rather not do that and get rid of Big Belly and not raise my residents' rates.
Do you know how quickly we could get out of the contract?
Well, we could get out of the contract tomorrow. But you're going to pay the service fee through February of 2021. I don't have the numbers, but you're basically you're going to pay that out tomorrow if you get terminate that contract, plus a fee up to $500 per unit to have those units removed.
Because I'm not, I mean, I'll just tell you right now, I'm not going to vote to do a recycling pass through to our residents of 231 when we're spending 231 on Big Belly.
Commissioner, I don't think we voted to pass on any recycling fees to the customers. That's just an option, but we haven't said.
No, we haven't voted, but they're asking us to. That's the recommendation when you get to the last page. I'm just fast forwarding.
Jay, of the 231 we spend, what part of that includes a full-time employee, right?
There is
one or two. How many people do we have?
I think we came down to one when we did the whole gyration. One employee.
There's one employee who's full-time dedicated to Big Belly.
And it's a portion of people that service it.
But if you killed the program, even though you might have to pay them a fee, would we still at least save a salary? And let me, to answer the question, Big Belly pays for itself either one of two ways. Either advertising, but at the time the commission did not want to put advertising on them, or reduce the number of times you go clean them out. The problem is we don't pay for that because the haulers who do this under their contracts have agreed that they will pick them up. So there was no savings for us, even if they were less frequently picked up, because we weren't paying for that. It didn't reduce our demand of labor or anything. So these were always going to be costing us money. And frankly, given that where they are, a lot of the waste is food and things like that, we don't necessarily want it to sit that much longer there anyway, because you get more odor from it. So I think eventually we would say to terminate these, but I don't know if there's a savings even today.
We'd have to do the financial analysis, but you'd probably be looking at, if we were to terminate this, let's just say October 1, you'd probably be looking at a payout of somewhere on the order of magnitude of $250,000. So you'd have to pay that to terminate the program. Now,
granted, that just a one-time payment?
It'd be a one-time payment. Again, that's a ballpark number. I'd want to do the analysis. There are additional costs associated with the program aside from the FTE and that service cost, and that is for insurance, for property tax, and a few of those other items and repairs to the station, because it's sitting there in the street, so any of the repairs, if it gets hit by a car, something like that, that can get expensive too. I mean, these units aren't cheap. They're $5,000 to $7,000 a piece. So if it gets wiped out by a car, we then have to replace it. So while there is a one-time payout of, let's say the $250,000, you do reduce your overall, some of those incremental annual expenses associated with the program.
You want to come back to us with a recommendation on that specific?
Because for $250,000, you're going to save almost 2 years' worth of payments to them, plus FTEs, plus. Hmm. So let's take a look at that.
Let us know. It might just be cheaper to cancel. Okay. So let's walk through the recommendations and just guide us, John, on what you want us to do.
Yeah. This won't take much longer. If we go to slide, let's see, where are we here? Get the presentation back up. So we talked a little bit about taking the alternate side parking program citywide. We feel like we can save up to $228,000 if that pilot's successful. Backyard service. So this is something that if someone said, well, I don't want to raise rates no matter what, then we would need to look at things more than likely in the long term anyway, such as the backyard service that we provide, and then we provide 2-day-a-week pickup. So this is where we could get bigger savings, let's say, on the expenditure side of the equation. If we were ever going to consider these things, I'm not sure we need to consider them today, but it would be good to sort of have a feel for what would be the, if there is any temperature here, to potentially look at these harder and get more information. What would it take, in other words, to even seriously consider these? So,
John, just a question on this. Is it possible that folks that want the backyard service could be charged more than folks that don't? Could we do that?
It's possible. As you recall, we just re-entered into a contract last year for the residential service. In order to do that, we'd probably have to change the rate structure. May have to. I don't know if we could amend the contract. I'd have to talk to procurement if it could be a contract amendment, or if we'd have to go back out on the street and go through a whole process again, because it was bid and awarded with the backyard service component. So we'd have to look at
that. We can research that.
Can we do some research on it?
Yeah, I think it's worth looking at because I'm not today ready to immediately change the way we do things, but it's fair to say that going to the backyard has extra cost. Some people may think it's worthwhile and willing to pay. Some people would say, well, if I'm going to pay, I'd rather just bring it to the front.
I would offer that from an operations standpoint, that if I as a contractor either have to go to this house and go to the backyard or go to that house and don't go to the backyard, yeah. I'm probably not going to save much because I got to staff the truck with two people. So
yeah,
I'm not sure
question.
That's really going to get you somewhere where you want to be.
I think it's something Daryl will have to talk to the waste hauler about because it could be, for example, if Lagorse Island and it's a discrete geography that's very and you know they all want backyard service and they're willing to pay for it and it's discrete and controllable like yeah. that. Maybe it's workable. But I can see your point, Jay, that if it's house by house, mm-hmm. it'd be very difficult for the waste hauler to know what to do.
I was going to say that. I've actually already spoken with the waste hauler.
Okay, what'd they say?
I figured you probably want to know.
Yeah.
And so at this time, there are residents who choose just to bring theirs to the curb already.
Most people have no idea that they have access to backyard, and so they bring it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my observation as a resident. Mm-hmm. I see those cans on the curb all the time. But that's not exactly my question. My question is, if we decided that our standard would be to eliminate backyard service, but if a particular area wanted to continue to pay more for that higher level of service, is that something that the waste hauler could accommodate?
We'd have to entertain that question to them.
I don't see house by house how they would know or be able to.
Yeah, I think it might be difficult. I see a problem with elimination of backyard services for single-family homes in Miami Beach, and we have a lot of elderly people that are still in their single-family homes. I think rolling out the garbage cans to the street twice a week is difficult, and I also think picking up one day a week with the heat that we experience is difficult due to the odors, and it's hot, it's tough.
We left no rock unturned.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you looking to save money, but I think the doggy bag crew efficiency makes sense. You don't need a crew of three people. You need one person driving and one person to replace the bags. But that makes sense, and some of the other things, the alternate side parking certainly makes sense. I think we'll have cleaner streets as a result and more cleaner streets. But I think the two... garbage hauling items are not good for single-family homes.
We're not recommending them in the ultimate proposal, but we wanted you to know
them. I'm more open-minded on the backyard service because, as you can see, we're one of only three cities in the entire county that offers backyard service, and I think what the recommendation is going to be is that if we're going to keep it, everybody's going to pay more. And I'm sensitive to, we just talked about stormwater fees going up, mm-hmm. All the different fees. We talked about the recycling fee potentially needing to go up. So where we have an opportunity to reduce service, and it's not a gross reduction of service, but more of a return to a common normal, I'm open-minded about that. I think we should look, and especially if there is the capability with the waste hauler, that if a particular neighborhood wanted to pay a premium for a backyard service, they could do that. And the rest of the city could pay less.
Well, I wanted to mention that it's not unprecedented for what you were actually indicating earlier for elderly. You know, many municipalities throughout the U.S., they do have what they would call a special collection mm-hmm. for the elderly. That is no additional cost because of the same issues that you brought up.
And the same would be true for disabled people?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be good.
Let's do that.
Yeah. Okay. What kind of... jumping ahead, so I'm going to jump ahead.
Oh, can I speak on
go
this?
Go ahead, and then I'll
yeah.
speak. Go ahead.
Yeah, just we talked about this at Budget Advisory as well, you know, it being a very large item, $500,000, and we thought it would be helpful to get some actual statistics on how many backyards are currently being served because it may well be the case that we're spending a lot of money for relatively few people. And then, as you said, if there, you know, you do might want to do something special for the disabled and the elderly, but for $500,000, you know, for $50,000, you could hire somebody to go around. I mean, the numbers really beg the question, you know, is this really worth what we're spending for, which is what the zero-based budget exercise is all about.
That's good.
Yep. This is great. I like this exercise because we're really going through the sanitation budget item by item. So this has been very helpful and very well put together. As I read it on page 92 of the agenda, you kind of give us the balancing strategies at the end of all this. You've highlighted in green the ones that you're recommending to us to hit the $855,000 shortfall. I agree, by the way, with what you've done, except for in one area. I don't think we can get rid of, reduce the service to one day a week. I think the residents are going to be very upset. I don't live in a single-family home, but I know many friends that do, and I think they're going to be pretty upset if we eliminate backyard services because we've always done it. You're taking away something that they're used to. But I'll defer to my friends that live in single-family homes on the dais, but I think that's going to be very controversial with the residents. I'm fine with the other reductions in services that you're proposing, the doggy bag crew and the other things that you're telling us. On the revenue enhancement side, I'm fine with what you've highlighted in green, except for that $231,000 recycling fee pass-through. I think you need to look for it in other areas. When I reviewed the package, Big Belly just happened to be the same amount, so I kind of jumped on that one. I'm like, why are we paying Big Belly and then passing on this cost? I would like to see something else without having to pass that through, because it sounds like we're going to be passing through stormwater rate increases and water and sewer increases and all other kinds of increases. So I'd rather not put this fee through. I don't know if you can eliminate Big Belly. I don't know if you can increase the franchise fees a little more or the roll-off fees more or look for money in another area. But I'm kind of fine with what you suggested except for that recycling fee pass-through.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. and I recognize that, and certainly we are sensitive to the residential rate, whether it's sanitation or stormwater, water and sewer, whatever it may be, and very takes our attention very much so. The one thing that I would call out to you would be if we look at the charge, the annual charge for that residential rate, currently at the $543.96, and you look at the other two communities that have that backyard service, especially where it goes up, the annual fee for those in Coral Gables, effective October 1/19, is going to go up to $894. There's a relatively large delta there. And I only say that just to point it out, that's one of the reasons why when we looked at that delta, we said, what are we missing? What do they have built in that we don't have built in? And that's where we say, well, how, you know, we don't want to be the top of the line, we don't want to be the bottom line, but we ought to be in line. And I think the feeling is that delta is of such an extent that it may make sense to take a look at that. And as John had explained earlier, what we're really trying to do is to stop depleting our reserve funds and have to come up with some level of revenue stream so that we get to a point where we are. And maybe that doesn't have to happen in 1 year, but maybe there are certain things such as, and that's why I recommended a recycling pass-through, that would at least take that and in line with some of the things that this commission has offered, say, put it, you know, where's the cost, where's it go, what's the end user, if there's a CPI attached to something, how can we automatically, you know, sort of put that in an automatic level, and that's what the recycling does. I mean, we haven't gotten a word yet from the county as far as what their recycling increase may be this year. They're talking maybe 1%, which, again, it amounts to pennies, if you will, on that fee, but, again, it's something that we can almost big automatic if we were able to break that out and put it through. So I just offer that to you, and that if there is still this delta and we need to somehow come to this, maybe not this year, over a couple of years, then maybe that's something that we look at, just as was done on the parking fees, something that we look at, you know, coming back to ground zero.
Go ahead.
Let's talk a little more about recycling. You mentioned that recycling really doesn't work, that it's just to make you feel good, but that the stuff gets dumped in other countries for landfill or to hurt our waters. why do we have recycling? Why don't we just stop that? There'll be no pass-through. There'll be nothing.
I was thinking the same thing.
I don't know today. You know, you may be right. I'm not disagreeing with you. But I think if you tell people we're not recycling in Miami Beach, just it sound the message right. that we're sending goes against yeah. everything we stand for.
It makes you feel good.
Right. So
I'm not prepared to vote to stop that based on this dialogue here, but I think it's a good conversation starter, and maybe if we educate ourselves and the public, it would be an eventual thing to move away from. But I'm not prepared to stop it today at a budget meeting.
So, Commissioner Malkoff, great question. I was thinking the same thing, and great observation. And you're right. I would offer, maybe in September when we reconvene, put it on the agenda. Let's have a adult conversation about recycling to educate ourselves and the public, because I don't know that we're going to end our recycling program because it does make people feel good, but somebody's got to educate the population about what's going on in this country, and might as well be us.
Yeah. Can I chime in?
Yeah, please.
For a second, I was going to mention that currently, Memphis, Tennessee's airport, they currently are landfilling everything that goes into that people throw away, even if it's considered recycling. However, they still have the cans there that say recycle. Because they do not want to go through the exercise of what you all were just talking about of trying to re-educate the public. Yeah. Mm. And then when the markets change, then you're going back
yeah.
to go ahead and tell them again. So we're kind of, this green fence, the national sword, has only happened since 2016. So we're going to give it a little chance.
Say that again. So what happened in 2016?
The green fence. The national sword. That's
yeah, we should do this in September, but tell us what that is.
That is actually what the Chinese has actually issued for their contamination issues that they're having.
Prior to 2016, we would ship all our stuff to China. China decided no more. In 2016, they called it the green fence.
Yes.
Yeah. So they said no more. So essentially, recycling in this country was never recycling, but our recycling stopped in 2016. So it's all going to our landfills now or other third world countries. It no longer goes to China. So China even said, enough. We don't want to pollute ourselves anymore.
But currently there are some Chinese recycling companies that are coming to the U.S. and they're buying out their old pulp plants that we have here in the U.S. So we're expecting the markets to pick back up sometime soon. So that's kind of why some folks are, we're trying to figure out, well, maybe we should wait before we start discontinuing our recycling programs. But, to what you were saying, that there are some cities that have done that and entities.
Yeah. I mean, ended the recycling programs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's put it on the agenda, if it's okay with you, in
That's
September. Good. We could bring in some experts, whether from universities or whatever, to educate us on this, because I think we need to have this public dialogue to get the ball rolling and educate consumers, because I think the long-term answer is going to be something like either we get rid of single-use plastics or we do what you used to have with glass bottles, where you had deposits, so they actually create a market for it so that there's an incentive to recycle, because the way we're going, it's awful. Sorry, Joy?
I don't think we can do it community-wide that glass bottles, my understanding is it's the state of Florida has to
institute. Oh, no, yeah, I'm not saying we can do that.
It would be
wonderful.
It would be a great idea.
Yeah, by putting the dialogue out there, maybe we can get other municipalities to start having this conversation and maybe change something in this country. But the public should be aware of what the situation is. There is no recycling going on.
So, Commissioner, when you say put it.
I'm supportive of the green on the reduction sides. I think this has been a very productive exercise, well done, and I look forward to doing other of the key departments. I, like Commissioner Alamon, would like to hear more about the backyard services. Mm-hmm. I think Ron made a very good point. What are the stats? How many folks are we actually doing it? I think Commissioner Alamon's point, is there a way to do it by neighborhood? I'm not sure the mechanics of that, but I always like the thought of if there's a premium service that some people would pay more. So I think that is worth exploring. And I just have one other comment. I do support the piloting of the alternate side street, but I think that we really, and I know we're going to Flamingo Park, really need to engage the community. We're asking them to do something they haven't done. Parking's a challenge, so I'm supportive of it, but let's really work as closely as we can with the community, because that has been an area where people have raised questions because it's new and different. But I like the idea of more effective at a lower price, but let's just make sure we're tight with the community on that.
Can I add one more to do, which would be for the administration to go back and talk to Big Belly. It's not in their interests for it to get out into the world that we're not seeing a business case on Big Belly and it's costing us hundreds of thousands of dollars per year. That's not in their interest for that to become, you know, widely known. So a little pain sharing for the rest of the contract would be great.
We'll do that, and we'll also sharpen our pencils on the savings there. That might avoid having to do the pass-through.
So I'm going to exercise a little chairman's prerogative here and try to land this plane. John, can you call this to a close? What do you need us to vote on? Do you want to go line by line on this?
Well, how about this? It sounds like we are in agreement on the on the cost side of this. In other words, alternate side parking, reduction in litter crew, elimination of two code officers, reduction in doggy bag crew.
All the yellows.
All of those, and then maybe explore backyard service, but don't kind of build that in at this point. And then on the revenue side,
John. So, yeah, I don't know the temperature. I think we're all sort of interested in the elimination of backyard service with some caveats. As Commissioner Malikoff mentioned, I think those are really good for the elderly and disabled.
Yep.
Let's quantify how many. But I do think there's some cost savings there to be had. I think we're all open to that. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the full $500,000.
So we'll research that.
Find something there. I think the one-day-per-week service, that's probably not on the table. I think that's something that – sir.
I just wanted you all to know that I actually found that Orlando, the city of Orlando, and the county, Orange County, they went to this one-day-a-week service in 2017. I talked with a solid waste manager. He feels that it's been very successful the way they phased it in instead of just, you know, one fell swoop. And currently, today, it's actually working well for them.
Really?
Yes.
So I don't know that but – I just think that's something that's the sort of thing that's very visible to residents.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a significant amount of money, but it's this kind of thing that I think could annoy residents, like seeing their garbage pile up. I'm surprised to hear that in Orlando it's working well. I mean, if it works well, great, but I worry that this is the kind of thing that's very visible to residents, and so I'm not sure we want to do that, even though it's a significant cost savings. I think people don't want to have...
I agree, and maybe it's cooler in Orlando.
Yeah,
I'm new to Florida, so I didn't know.
Okay, so we're not doing that. You're going to come back to us with the elimination of backyard service. So we've covered the cost side, right? We're all in agreement?
We would add Big Belly to that. We will explore that would look like, right?
And then, revenue enhancements. Talk to us about revenue enhancements then. Where are we on that? Franchise fees and roll-offs, we're okay with those?
That's what we would like direction on, because I think we, you know, it sounded like from the discussion that the main concern was the residential fee, residents that, you know, the recycling fee would be the one that would impact them the most. So if we could get consensus on the franchise fees and roll-offs, that would be
franchise
great.
Franchise fees, roll-offs?
Franchise fees and roll-offs, yes.
Now, you don't like the recycling fees, or you're okay with the recycling fees? You said no to the residential fees.
Well, they don't want to raise the residential fee. I don't think any of us want to do that. I would rather not do the recycling fee pass-through and look for the 231 somewhere else. I don't know. Maybe there's cost savings if we do a hybrid on the backyard services like it's being proposed or someplace else. I don't like passing through fees here because I don't feel that we have to, and there's going to be other fees that we are going to have to pass through, so I'd rather do as little as possible.
Mr. Chair, question. What is the cost per household of the pass-through of the 231?
It's the 362.
A month?
Sorry?
I think that's, per month, 362. $3.62.
Slide 35. Yeah, slide 35.
362 per month. Per month, $3.62 per month.
It's estimated there's a CPI going. Estimated to go up 1% this year.
And I think one commissioner asked me during the briefings, could we, if we added this to the utility bill, could we break it out in some way? The county, and that could be done. We did confirm that's possible.
We're already paying for this. This is the county bills us, and we are absorbing it in the general operating budget as opposed to passing it through.
It was from the county.
Yeah, I mean.
And not the city.
I hear you, but it's like Commissioner Gongora, but these are fees that we're incurring, so we just got to eat it. So taxpayers are already paying for this. It's just this more direct.
It goes directly to the end user. That is correct.
It goes to the end user as opposed to just sort of this general ether of the general operating budget. I mean, I think in light of the conversation we're going to have about recycling, what would you be okay with just tabling this and then making a decision on recycling fee until we sort of...
I'm fine tabling it, but also, we're going to be in this position next year.
Yep.
So part of what I like about keeping it there is it gives us something next year to do away with. And I think we can get to where we need to be this year without that.
And maybe with Big Belly.
I'm thinking about next year already.
Yeah, you know what I'm thinking about, though, is to the extent that as we inform ourselves about recycling and we can educate the consumer, then we can, you know, the end consumer, our residents can start making educated decisions about recycling and what we want to do with it. Anyway, well.
Yeah, I'm fine tabling it.
And let's table that line item, move forward with the franchise fee and roll-off increases. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay.
So I think we're good to go there, and I just want to clarify, when you said put recycling on the agenda, do you want to do that at Sustainability, Finance Committee, the Commission? Where do you think is the best place there?
If it's okay with you, let's all hear it. I mean, if we're going to bring in some experts, I'd like to have some people come in, whether it's internal experts or invite some folks. I think we're going to have the Coke contract come up soon, so we can sort of talk about both, because they're going to bring in their experts saying that, you know, their plastic bottles are very valuable. I'd like to counter that with some other expert advice. So
I think that Coke item is going to two committees.
That's going to two committees, Finance and Sustainability.
Should we sort of piggyback and do the same thing?
Sustainability and Finance.
Yeah, let's do it there.
Okay. All right. So if we can pause there, maybe we can. One, I'd like to just thank everybody that worked on this thing. Could you guys stand up?
And
I'd
like to echo that. I mean, I don't know if you really got into the green sheet, but this took
talk to us
many
about the
hours.
Process, the zero-based budgeting process, because I think it was educational.
Yeah, well, at least from a starting point, let me start with that, and then maybe Daryl, you know, he walked in as the new director and said, hey, welcome to Miami Beach. Here's a science project for you. So I really want to thank him for being a great sport. But because the city has embraced the program budget process, thankfully we weren't this could have been harder for us, if you will, because we already have done a ton of work with the budget office and all the operating departments to identify, at least at some level, what are their programs, what are the FTEs positions, and what is the budgets, both expenditure and revenue, that support all those programs. So at least we had something to work with initially, and then from that we expanded it and kind of, and it's like a program budget on steroids, if you will. And at that point, that's where a lot of the work shifted over to Public Works. And so maybe you guys could share a little bit of what that was like.
The pain? Well, it really, as you said, it started at the bottom coming up. And we reached out to our folks that were deep into the operation, said, okay, who's doing what? We looked at each of the route sheets, if you will, of the crews, and then said, okay, where are all the things that we do? Here's the things that we break out. And then there's a million of those other little tasks associated with, okay, we're going to do surf rider ashtrays. I need somebody to go hang that up. We're going to go fix the trash can that fell over on the corner. Who's going to do that? There's a million of those types of activities. And with the dwindling workforce, you're always asking to do more with less. So while there's some numbers had a 0.5 FTE and a 3-point FTE, that may not have been three actual bodies. It may have been nine bodies, but a third of their time was broken up into it. Okay. So it really took a lot to break that down.
Am I remembering this incorrectly? I thought that surf when we did those cigarette receptacles with Surfrider, I thought the Surfrider said that they were going to be emptying those, counting and recording data.
They are. What we ended up doing was doing the installation of them.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
All. And you will be getting a full report on that. So, yes.
Okay, done. So you're okay. So we've taken action on the sanitation recommendations, right?
Right. Okay. And I think we agree that this is a valuable tool in the tool belt. And so I think maybe if we want to talk about what maybe the next one or two of these could be, we could start working on one for the fall and maybe one for the spring.
Yeah, I wanted to ask it. So, Jimmy, what were your thoughts on this process, the zero-based budget?
I think it's outstanding. And if you look, because some of the data that pops up, you know, as we do a count, we've got 1,800 cans out there. We talk about can on every corner. That's been an extremely successful program. And the data on, like, the doggy bags, when you, you know, zone out and you go, oh, my God, a little program morphs. And so those are things to keep in mind. So I think it was a great exercise. And, in fact, we started with sanitation because it was a challenged department. And I think we, you know, we've John and I have talked about what could be some other departments. And we do want to continue maybe one or two a year. It's a it's an intense program, but I think one or two a year. And it's great because, God forbid, in 2 years we have to do a major belt tightening. We've already got sort of a breakdown of where those first cuts could come from that, you know, if necessary.
May I suggest, do you recall at our recent meeting we were talking about special events and grants? Can we sort of tackle that as the next year? Because what happens is we approve things in 1 year, and then just de facto they get approved and, you know, reapproved without that much scrutiny necessarily. This was a great exercise. I really liked that you embrace the spirit of, you know, there's no sacred cows. Like, let's actually dig in, surface all of the ideas, because maybe something that made sense to, you know, us 3 or 4 years ago, now, looking back, you know, doesn't make so much sense, and we should scrutinize those decisions. So I would like to recommend that as a possible next area for this sort of analysis, Jimmy.
So, yeah, I mean, I had a great briefing with you and Tamika. John, you expressed that this was an educational and possibly transformative exercise. And I mentioned to you that, you know, this is probably something that we could, in sort of government circles, do like a presentation, panel discussion as, you know, being one of the first government entities to use zero-based budgeting. And I think it's a good discipline. I do think that we should probably tackle one or two departments a year so that, you know, every – so that, you know, like every 5 years, every five-year cycle, we would have touched almost every single department so that we maintain the discipline. I agree with you. Special events would be a good place to do it. I'd also recommend, in light of also Commissioner Samuelin's idea about looking at and homeless issues, our community – homeless services department as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's been a great process. Thank you for putting forward. You took the word out of my mouth. That was one of my suggestions. And I would just offer one other that the administration consider is transportation. Such a critical issue for the community. We spend a lot. Any ways to optimize around that? So I think special events is good. Homeless, transportation. Maybe the administration could cook with that in mind.
If you have the bandwidth to do three, that'd be great. Well, special events probably not that hard, right?
Yeah, it depends. You know,
special events not hard,
right? No, I think this sounds reasonable. We can get there. And really, as we've talked about the budget, looking ahead, more than likely we're going to experience fiscal challenges for the next couple of years. Is probably one way to generalize it. And so any of these exercises are going to put us in a better position.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's value just for that reason, if nothing else. So that's great.
One thing I just want to highlight it's neither an efficiency or an enhancement, but pressure washing. I want to just briefly. We have 9 people dedicated to that full time. We spend $1 million a year, and you can see all the areas we clean. One of the things we've done over the years, even though sidewalk cafes in this city by code are supposed to pressure clean their areas, historically, they haven't done it, and we've had to pick up that slack. So one of the things we are recommending, and it's not an enhancement, or like I said, or a revenue enhancement, is now, especially with bids and whatnot, we are really going to try to enforce that they've got to pressure clean at their cost, their areas. And that way our crews, because, you know, one of the complaints is the cleanliness of some of our sidewalks, can focus on the areas that we should be doing it, and let them who are dirtying those sidewalks with their restaurant operations have the responsibility that they should have under the code. It just, you know, it's over the years it just turned out we were doing it, and there's that expectation. But candidly, especially with the bids in place on Lincoln Road, Ocean Drive, et cetera, Washington, they should be doing that function, and it'll allow us, I think, to do more other areas and improve cleanliness. So just to put that on the – so that if you get that phone call, you'll know that I think that's
I mean, Mayor Gelber needs something to do, so put him out on the crew. Let him do some pressure washing. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
you want to do four?
Well, four and five are really just in the context of the stormwater discussion we were having earlier. My understanding about four, maybe Commissioner Samuelin, maybe help me here, is that this was an old item from September 2018. The focus of it, I believe, was the above ground funding, and that, you know, at that time, the geo bond had not passed yet, and so there was some concern about that. So this was a stormwater item as well as number five that had been kind of floating around in the queue here, and so we just thought, hey, if we could address it at this point, great. And I think events have kind of overcome this one, and that we will probably discuss stormwater budgeting further when we get to post Jacobs engineering study. Is that?
Yeah, that's 100% accurate. So we can remove item number
four.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, great. And Commissioner Areola, number five was one that had been brought up on June 5th. I believe this one was yours. And so if we wanted to talk about this one now, we could have. At the same time, I believe that more than likely this is probably best in the context of post-Jacobs engineering study and the sequencing there, if that sounds okay.
Good afternoon. This has been an educating process. Thank you for allowing me to witness it. This issue, I'm going to bring it up every single time. We have money sitting in the bank. North Beach Town Center needs to raise their roads. We are at a 3.5 NABD, 3 NABD. We have to be a 3.5 NABD. Whether it's going to be, Jacobs is going to say 3.7, 3.9, or 3.3, our streets have to be raised, and that infrastructure has to be done. Why have this sitting around in the budget, anticipating if, in fact, Lakeview will or won't come around when North Beach Town Center needs it? We need it from structural infrastructure and raising the road, and we want it. So why delay? You have the money. Please reallocate it. If, in fact, the other areas come back and say, we changed our mind, put it in the next cycle. You've already told them that they're out of the cycle. The next time they're going to be able to come back is 6 years from now. But why should we have to wait? That's all I have to say on that. I think I've said it all 100 times. I'm pleading for you guys. Can we get a vote?
Yeah, so thank you for bringing this up. I like the idea, right? I don't know if you have an opinion on this, Jimmy, but if we are not going to allocate funds that we've already set aside, that we previously set aside for the Lakeview and Upper North Bay Road neighborhoods, and it's unlikely we're going to do that anytime soon. We have the money. We saw it in the chart earlier. Do we want to reallocate it to North Beach, where we know we're going to have to do this work, and we know there's significant investment ready to roll? Do we do this? I think there's logic to it. Unless we're committed to allocating the funds that we'd previously appropriated for Upper North Bay Road and Lakeview, unless we're going to spend it, it's just going to sit there, and North Beach is just going to wait till we make a commitment. I mean, this is an important issue.
I thought that Lakeview and North Bay Road are top of the list for we're just waiting for Jacobs. And then Jacobs is supposed to be doing sequencing. I don't see any reason why it has to wait to the end. But North Beach should be on it as well. I mean, they can do both.
Joy, I agree with you, but let's talk political reality. Do you think this body's going to do it?
I'm talking political reality.
Do you think this body's going
to
do that?
To thrive,
I'm going to lose you and John in a couple of months. I might be the only person willing to do this in Lakeview and North Bay Road.
My comment, Mr. Chair, if I may, was similar to Commissioner Malikoff. We've hired Jacobs to do this work. That's one of their three tasks, right, which is to sequence. So I would like to see them do the work we're paying them for.
But Vice Mayor, you asked me. Here's we keep talking about stormwater projects, but I think as was pointed out during the presentation, obviously we simultaneously do the water and sewer projects. We do know that in North Beach, in the town center areas, the issue of water pressure that is going to be a critical infrastructure issue,
Eric,
for the towers up there and whatnot. So we do know that water infrastructure issues up there, and perhaps also sewer, I'm not sure, I'll leave that up to Eric to add, are going to have to be addressed as part of the redevelopment of that area. So now, it may not be a stormwater high on the list, but at some point we do have to sort of combine the two, overlay them, because it may be an area where we have to address water and sewer infrastructure sooner rather than later. So there is some validity, obviously, to what Matias is talking about. But Eric, I don't know if there's a sewer issue up there, but obviously we do have a process with Jacobs. We know by the end of the year we'll hopefully have their report. This could be a neighborhood where we talked about sort of a simultaneous design criteria package and the standard and one of. This could be a neighborhood because there is, I think, some sensitivity, perhaps on water sewer. I don't, Eric, do you want to?
Yeah, before Eric, because my initial reaction was, well, let's just wait, for the full schedule and see what's next. However, one of the factors that we asked Jacobs to look at was, besides just the necessity within the systems themselves, is like other factors, whether it's an FDOT project that's out of our hands or, something else that is not just a city project that we ought to be cognizant of, that we can't completely control the timeline. And town center redevelopment is to me definitely one of those things. So we know that we've got four planning applications for new developments with a whole bunch of new commercial and residential within them. So it would be suboptimal, it seems like, to have the private development and then just as they're ready to, turn over keys to everybody, whether it's a new retail or it's a new resident, that we come in and rip up all the roads with a major project. So, Eric.
I would tell you that the biggest piece of the puzzle from my perspective on North Shore and Town Center is the Hazen and Sawyer report that's being put together on the water and sewer. More specifically, the water model and the sewer model that they are putting together, because my concern is we know we have some undersized water pipes in some of those areas. Are we going to put that on the development community to upsize those pipes to bring the needed water and sewer capacity to their developments, or are we going to do that as part of a holistic improvement in the area to try and spur redevelopment? So that really is the most critical piece of it. And Roy, are we still on track for August? Last day of August is when we're anticipating that information to be available. So, I mean, at this point, we're talking about, a little over 30 days.
Excuse me, Commissioner, but that goes exactly to buttress the argument to do this together, because in 30 days from now, you're going to have a report, and we all know that capacity, we're going to want to increase capacity. We have problems with water tanks all the way down to South Beach. We want to increase pressure. We're going to go to 8-inch pipes. I mean, we all know that, but we just need the stamp. Now, going along with this is, it's not that staff is going to be surprised. We have top engineers in the city. We know basically what they're going to recommend. To what extent, we don't know. Now, taking that into consideration, start designing the program for 72nd, 70th Street, also is something you guys have to discuss regarding the Paseo that is non-existent, and 71st Street, which is an hour. So you need Dickens, Byron, Carlisle. This is a lot of work. And it's important work because you want to time it together with the development that you know is coming, that's already in the pipeline. So this is further support. So with 30 days down the road, we're going to have a report. Are we going to wait again, say, okay, then we'll go to next finance committee, which is in September? We keep on pushing it down the road with good reason. But right now we have a staff that's ready to prepare the documentation that you need. Get them started. You can start preparing for this, can't you? You don't have to wait entirely until that's finished.
We don't have to wait entirely till it's finished. However, if we're going to have Hazen and Sawyer identify the priority areas that need to be addressed, we need to have that data to see what exactly are the most critical pinch points that can open up the flow, so to speak. We also have the concept of Jacobs is going to be putting together the DCP packages for the entire project, water, sewer, storm. I guess what we'd need to have a conversation with Jacobs is whether or not we would be utilizing different resources or whether we would be using the same folks that are currently working on our stormwater program to allocate to the DCP packages. So there's a little bit more nuance to the discussion than just, you know, run forward.
Jimmy, guide us here. Let's say the Jacobs report comes back with sequencing and first in line is North Bay Road and Lakeview, right? So we already have the money for that. Question will be, does this body have the political appetite to say go? If the answer is no, then we can follow the Jacobs sequencing, but we know North Beach is going to need the money. So do we want to start getting a head start on that, whether it's the next tranche of stormwater bonds that we'd be looking to issue in 2020? Like, how do we do this? Because we know North Beach is going to need it. How do we start moving forward so we're not in a pause for another 3 years? Like, what do we need to do? Or you want to come back to us?
Well, during the August recess, sit down with both Hazen and Sawyer and Jacobs maybe and talk about, you know, the overlap of water sewer infrastructure and stormwater and that particular area, given that it is the sort of the redevelopment area where you're going to have four or five major projects.
Correct.
That are going to put a heavy demand on infrastructure. Let us maybe come back in September with a more informed discussion.
Yeah, because look, we know some or all of the projects that we're like imminently voting on in the next month or two are going to happen.
Yeah.
So we know this major redevelopment happening in North Beach. Let's be proactive about this. So then let's think about what infrastructure needs are going to be required to meet the new coming demands, what the city's prepared to do so we can partner with the development community and get ahead of it, right? So if you want to come back with a recommendation and plan in September, let's do that. But we know what's going to happen, right? We know there's some significant redevelopment happening in North Beach from the public infrastructure side. What's the timing of our investment?
Mr. Chair, if I may. For me, it's less about finishing the consulting. It's more about us having the conviction and commitment that this is a top priority. If we know that now, then we can get balls moving. If we just need the next month to sort through that and come back and say this is the priority. So that, to me, is really the key thing. Are they far enough along? Do we know enough to say that this is the priority? And if we go there, just so we know, are there other areas that will not get attention as soon, and are we okay with that? So I think I look forward to that discussion.
May I add one more thing, Ricky?
Yeah, please.
Underneath the P80 lot is an infrastructure challenge because of the water tanks. And we know that has to be tackled. So when we're tackling that, you know, and south of that, town center has to be tackled. Tackling it separately instead of in one package seems to me misguided. I assume that you guys have already somewhat planned for it. In a perfect world, right, knowing what the challenges you have in front of you, what would you want to do? Would you want to wait the month, or would you want to start preparing now?
I would tell you that it goes back to the conversation that we had earlier today of where do you draw the lines on projects?
Yeah.
You can have a massive project that covers all of North Beach, or you can have a project that covers several blocks and be more, you know, localized. It's extremely difficult to do the transition between old and new, and so to the extent that you can minimize that transition, everybody agrees that's better. It's just a function of how much disruption in the neighborhood is too much disruption.
And that's why I would say you start with the most critical, which is under the P80 lot, and which what you know is going to get developed right now, which is Town Center, which will be the least amount of disruption.
Okay. You guys want to work on that? Think about it?
Yeah.
I think
thank you very much.
You've got a very valid point. So.
Yeah, but we also have to know because we're on a time frame.
It's a very valid, accurate point. For once you have a valid and accurate point.
First time. This will be the last time.
Okay. You. I think that's it.
Interesting.
Good meeting,
discussion.
Guys. John, is that it? We're good?
Sure.
Thank you for your work. You and your whole team did really great work.